This is Radio Today broadcasting in Johannesburg on 1485 AM and nationally on DSTV Audio Channel 869.
Want to know what to eat, where to go and who to know in Johannesburg and all around? Then join us on Soundbites every Saturday, brought to you by the Food Cops on Radio Today. Good afternoon, South Africa, and welcome to Soundbites with myself, Edward Chamberlain Bell, and Barbara Gilman. Wherever you are in the country, I hope it is a stunning Saturday. Barbara, I believe you had a stunning experience at the Oak Leaf Restaurant. Tell us about it.
All right, fine, thank you. We went to the Oak Leaf Restaurant, which is a beautiful restaurant, beautiful venue, and they have the most amazing facilities for children, where we were welcomed by Gary. Gary gave us the most enormous welcome, and that's why the food was superb, and that's why we brought him in today. Hi, Gary, over to you.
Gary Dutoy, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, Food Cops. Lovely to be here.
It's actually a pleasure to have you on the show. Now, it's actually quite a good, well, Barbara just mentioned two things that I thought were quite telling. One is you're fully booked. It's always a good sign, I think, if you see a restaurant is full. There's nothing worse than eating at an empty restaurant because you don't know how much food they're just trying to offload before it expires. But then even more so, you're actually welcoming, in fact, that you actually made space for Barbara. Did you know she has a food cup?
No, I didn't, but she's really easy to love. She's so congenial.
Thank you.
Got a lovely smile.
Thank you. Well, what I'm trying to tell the listeners is, apart from the wonderful welcome, the children's facilities are superb. The day we were there, there was a crowd of 70 children having a birthday party, and it didn't interfere with the adults at all, and that was so amazing. The children have their space, and we had our own space.
Did you take your kids or grandkids with you?
No, not... Yes, yes, I did.
You
did
take
two of them, yes.
Two of them, kids or grandkids?
Grandkids.
Okay,
grandkids. Yeah. And they had a ball. And what's so nice as well, Edward, they have a childminder who looks after them, the parents, the children, everybody's safe. It's the most beautiful venue.
What did you like about the venue, decor-wise?
Everything was geared to whatever you wanted it to be. It's homely. It's got everything that we wanted. The food was lovely. The children loved it. We couldn't bring them back into the main restaurant and say, come sit with us. No. They wanted the jungle gym and the childminder and the painting, and it was amazing.
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 What is the theme of your restaurant? I haven't been there yet, but Barbara's been raving about it, so let you do the talking.
Oh, great. I'm looking forward to hosting you there, Chris. The theme of our restaurant is family. We're a family restaurant. We gear towards family. We gear towards kids. Being where we are, we're pathologic of our quality and service. So we want to deliver that contrast that you don't often get in restaurants. You get exquisite food and a child-friendly environment. So that's what we're aiming to do over there. So we're looking forward to your visit. When you come, Chris?
I'll be coming there pretty soon. What is the menu like? Tell me, first of all, what's the menu like?
We've got a very
diverse... Because you've had a couple of restaurants. Sorry to interrupt you. You've had a couple of restaurants before. You've had a Jamaican eatery. What is it? The Jamaican... I remember the Jamaican somewhere in my wild days in Melville.
Okay. Those forgettable days in Melville. We also had the
unforgettable
stage.
Days, actually. Yeah. You've also had the stage.
The stage, the Media Mall Cafe, Back to Basics.
So you really know your stuff when it comes to restaurants.
I like to do my best. The more I'm in it, the more I realize that the only people who really know what's important are your clients.
Sure.
Exactly.
Gary, tell us about your high tea.
Well, we've got a lot of clients that come in that like light, decadent meals, and that's what the high tea is geared towards. So lots of sweets and savories, and we've got a wide selection. We try only do it for groups of 10 or more because we don't like the high teas where you have three or four little dainty meals and that's the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
We want lots and lots. Indulgence, I think, is a key element.
Mm. So for stork parties, hens parties, that kind of thing? Is
very,
it?
Very popular very destination. Popular. We've got a lot of private rooms. So while there are a lot of kids and families about, there are a lot of spaces where
separate.
You can go with adults that are yours to indulge your decadent delights in.
And could we then, if we came as a group, tell you what we wanted? Would you tailor make bespoke?
We only care about what you want. We're not really invested in what we're about, more about what we can do for you.
Okay.
I quite like the idea that you also cater for bespoke menus, because very often I find if you've got like a special occasion, you've got certain preferences, and a lot of restaurants will dictate, well, this is on my menus, you can pick and choose what you want, but it's not often you find a restaurant that will go out of their way to create a menu that you're looking for. Let's come back to your main menu. What are you specializing in? And also, what I'm very interested to know, what are you doing better and differently with your current restaurant compared to your previous restaurants?
Well, some of my previous restaurants were dens of iniquity. The Oakleaf is more...
I remember those.
So subsequent to having kids, I realized there weren't enough restaurants that really catered to parents who wanted to go out and have a bit of quality face time with each other where the kids were taken care of. So the main difference for me is that I'm geared towards family. In the past, I was geared towards parting and fun and going large.
And Gary, you brought us a beautiful plate of goodies. Can you describe to the listeners what we have here and what you specialize in?
I could. Well, we specialize in seafood, pastas, pizzas, and grills. More of the meals that you'd expect to have in a family restaurant. But when it comes to bespoke menus, we've got world-class chefs. I mean, and they love being challenged. And they love clients who bring new deliverables to them. And occasionally we do buffets and have lambs on the spit and prawn and chicken curries. And we try to keep it different and fresh. Being a country restaurant, you've got those opportunities to run different specials and stews and soups and a whole lot of new different things on different days. Right. So my chef, if it's a freezing cold day, he'll whip up a couple of curries and put those in the menu.
Oxtail,
or lamb knuckle stew.
Okay.
Oxtail. Mm, you're
right,
speaking
okay,
my language.
Okay.
My mouth is warm.
Nice one.
Okay. And do you cater, you know, functions, Father's Day, Mother's Day, that kind of thing?
Father's Day and Mother's Day is epic. It's what we're all about. Okay. We're the family restaurant, so we're a very popular destination on those days.
So what kind of things? Would it be a set menu? Or
On very big days, I mean, you've got large parties, we've got to put some sort of measures in place to make sure that we deliver excellence in terms of quality of food and service. So set menus and buffets. If you're a table of 30 or more, we always encourage you to go on a buffet, because even if you're sending 8 meals a minute, if you're a table of 50, it's close on 8 minutes from when the first person starts to the last person gets their meal, and that's just too long.
By which time they've finished eating already, the first person.
Exactly.
Actually, it's Women's Month this month, and Women's Day is coming up somewhere
Friday,
along the line.
Friday.
Is it, well, you being a woman, you would know.
Absolutely.
Do you get presents on Women's Day?
No.
I know with the guys get the day off, so I mean, we're very happy with Women's Day. So, I mean, if any, not just companies, but even people looking to spoil the woman in their lives, they can always go to the Oakleaf Country Restaurant. And I see you guys are in Parkview or Parktown.
Sandhurst.
Jeez, Barbara, where did you learn to write? Okay. You're in you're on 167 Jan Smuts Avenue. So being on Jan Smuts, how does it become a country restaurant? I'm looking at some pictures of your restaurant, and it looks very homely.
Oh, thanks. We're not on Jan Smuts Avenue. We're on Rivonia Road. We're a kilometer towards town from Sandton City. So I think a lot of the girls out there will definitely know where that is. We're opposite IBM.
Opposite IBM, very easy to find, actually. It looks like I'm reading through Barbara's little black
little
book
notes,
here. Let
yes,
me put
absolutely.
That note down.
Right.
Okay.
Gary, tell us about your B&B section as well. You have a bed and breakfast.
Well, we're very blessed to be on an incredible estate called Acorn Lane that has a whole host of offerings. So there is a conference center. There are 19 ensuite B&B rooms. So it's really a great destination if you've got a special occasion or a wedding. There are places where your guests can stay on site. Mm-hmm. And there's a great wedding venue there as well.
That's actually quite nice. Have you got other facilities for people who are staying overnight? I'm thinking like a spa or entertainment.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that, yes.
There is a spa and a hairdresser, and apparently they're fabulous. My wife is addicted to the spa, yes.
Do you know what I love doing? Is often I find it's like traveling in South Africa is cost prohibitive, especially because of petrol. And if you fly down, you've got to hire a car. Mm. But if you drive down, it cuts into your time. And I'm a really cranky traveler when it comes to cars. But I find there's so many gorgeous places scattered around Johannesburg and around Gauteng that we don't have to travel as far as Durban or Cape Town when there's so much to do in South Africa, well, in Johannesburg specifically. But what I like to do occasionally is like have a dirty weekend where I check into, it can be a dirty weekend by myself for that matter, but I check into a local B&B that has great food, because it still feels like a holiday without having to travel, without having to go too far. And the Clique Boutique Hotel is really awesome, and also like Fairlawn's. But when you spend a night or two there, you honestly feel like you've traveled to a different part of the world, and you get great food, great service, awesome ambience. And I love the idea, but to me, if I go to a place, it has to have a spa, otherwise I'm wasting my time. So you'll probably find me checking into the B&B, spending the day at the spa, and probably spending the day eating everything.
Eating and playing on the children's playground.
Oh, thank you for that, Barbara.
Okay. Gary, tell us about your takeaway menu. Well, could we phone in and order supper?
Absolutely. We've got a couple of dishes with Mr. D. Can you tell us? You can. We've got a lot of corporates in the vicinity that phone us and book platters for their boardrooms or for a specific occasion. We do a little bit of external catering as well. But our takeaway menu is limited to the dishes that travel well. So calamari is not something that you find on our takeaway menu because it tends to go a bit ewy after 10, 15 minutes. So we've limited it a little bit to make sure that whatever you get, whether it's at home or in the restaurant, is as good as it possibly can be.
And piping hot or?
Well,
you're not going to say no.
Takeaways are never going to be piping hot when you get them unless they're wrapped in foil.
Right.
So, okay, like your stir fries, you'll get piping hot, and your oxtails and lamb knuckle stews, absolutely. But if you have something like chicken breast, as soon as you wrap it up, it starts to sweat, and it's not delicious.
Gets all tough and stringy. It just continues cooking. Actually, it's quite a nice idea because often I find I want to get a takeaway meal, but I don't want a takeaway meal. I'd actually like something that actually tastes homely or has a gourmet twist. It's food that I'm going to enjoy as opposed to just getting a pizza or a burger delivered that I'm eating out of laziness or convenience. So that's actually quite good to know that the Oakleaf Country Restaurant also delivers. And just to touch on what Barbara mentioned earlier, you also do external catering for companies and events. I'm just like wondering, in terms of like focusing on your menu, how difficult and how challenging is it to run a hotel where you've got to be on site to manage everything? But then on top of that, I just said the hotel. Sorry, I'm joking about the hotel. Well, you've got to run a restaurant, but you also do external catering, plus you do takeaways. I'm just wondering, it sounds like you probably get up to do events as well.
Well, while no, it's not a word that we like to have in our vocabulary, we do limit ourselves to things that we believe we can do well. So if there's an event that's too big or too challenging, we'll refer you to someone that we know and trust to execute that for you. At the end of the day, we can't be all things to all people, but we certainly know what we're good at.
Nice
one. And if we've got the opportunity to do something for you that we know we'll do well, we'll certainly commit to it and give it 100%.
What size or scale of events are you comfortable catering for?
The biggest event that we've done is up to 2,000 people.
Okay, well, I think that's big enough.
So you and your friends, Chris, we can look after you and your closest couple of thousand mates for an afternoon.
Because you know what I find? I'm so sick and tired of going to events where everything is the same. I mean, I was saying this a while ago, but everybody's serving these mini shawarmas or mini hot dogs or mini burgers. But after you've gone to four or five events and you've seen the same mini shawarmas and mini hot dogs, I'm beginning to think I'd rather actually just
stay
go
home.
So what could you do that you would suggest is something out of the ordinary that people have never seen before if you're catering for an event? And I hate to throw a spanner in the works, but just say like a really massive event with 2,000 people.
Well, you were actually sounding a little bit like my partner there for a moment in terms of...
If you're going to tell me I sound like your wife...
No, my business partner.
Your business partner.
And we're developing a thing called portable dining, specifically to address those sorts of concerns. We don't want to be the same as anybody else. So in terms of our portable dining menu, we've got little things like bits of bourrevoise and a wasabi barbecue dipping sauce.
That's different.
Veg halloumi skewers with sun-dried tomato pesto. Little veg stir fries in bowls for the meat eaters. We do little chicken pies, which is something that's unusual, but it's a nice like two or three mouthfuls you get in a little bowl, which in terms of those served or like small plated buffets is an excellent, very popular sort of option.
Nice
Sounds
one.
Lovely.
That pop-up restaurant idea is actually becoming quite a big trend. It's quite a novelty at the moment where you're not going to a destination to sit down and eat, but you're going to a destination that is like maybe a once-off experience. Pops up for the one night or maybe 4 days, and it's a use it or lose it sort of opportunity. Don't you find those things challenging? I know that they must be fun, but they must be challenging in their own right as well.
Well, we have more like pop-up events, so we've got the infrastructure. So I think it's less challenging when you've got everything that you need in order to execute something that's new and unique for your clients.
And Gary, can you tell us, please, about breakfasts, Sunday morning breakfasts?
Well, I've got to say, I start at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And one of the best things that I like about breakfast is coffee. We use Lavazza, which I think is
the best
coffee in the world. Certainly the most popular coffee in Italy. Mm-hmm. Our baristas are world-class, incredibly well-trained. So if you're a coffee aficionado, you will love our offering. We've got two different coffee beans, Tierra Super Crema, which is a mix of Arabica and Robusta beans. And the Tierra is just Arabica for that more pure, slightly more bitter coffee taste. So you get a little bit of and offering, and everything's on demand grinding. So if you order a cappuccino, we'll grind the coffee beans fresh for that cappuccino. There's as no, you order it.
That's actually the way you have to do it. You have to grind, I think, ideally grind them freshly. The one thing that I remember reading a while ago, if you look at filter coffee, if it's been sitting in that pot for over half an hour, it basically turns carcinogenic.
Absolutely.
So every time ever since I've read that, I always ask for a freshly made cup of coffee. I think it's called an Americano. It's like a cappuccino espresso topped up with water. But 9 times out of 10, I find I go to a lot of restaurants. I don't know what an Americano is, so I was going to say. Double espresso topped up with hot water. It's that simple.
Yeah, it comes from the Second World War, the word Americano, when the Americans couldn't handle the strength of the French coffee. So they always asked for a little bit of water on the side. And as a sort of hidden insult, the French named it an Americano, which the troops thought was quite affectionate, but insulted. In fact, it was slightly insulting.
When did the French ever compliment anybody affectionately?
Gary, tell us, do you do Eggs Benedict?
We have a deadly eggs.
Wow.
Okay. And we do the three types of the bacon, the salmon, and the spinazzi.
Okay. With the hollandaise sauce.
A deadly hollandaise sauce. My chef still won't share that recipe with me. Bastard.
I was actually just about to ask if you make your hollandaise sauce with lemon juice. Because I know traditional recipe uses lemon juice, but I actually found a bit too astringent-y. Maybe you've got to use less. I know you might need some kind of acid, but I had an very deadly hollandaise sauce the other day. And what I loved about it was that creaminess as opposed to that astringency. So unfortunately, I'm probably not going to get that recipe out of you.
Not out of me, but completely agree with you. It's one of those sauces that people either do well or they don't. I'm one of the people who don't. My chef is one of the people who do.
Okay.
Do you like a hollandaise sauce?
Oh, love it.
Yeah, do you?
Absolutely.
I was making Eggs Benedict the other day, and I think I might be repeating myself now, but I completely spoiled the hollandaise sauce, so I cheated and I just used mayonnaise, and I thought, well, that actually works quite well for me. No, it's not the same. But eventually I just buckled down and I told myself, everything that you find challenging in life is inevitably something that you don't enjoy or you're not good at, and it's just a question of practice. So the two things I've been battling with, one is to make a decent roux without it crumbling and getting lumpy and having to pop it into the blender, and the other one is the hollandaise sauce. And I thought, just be patient, and buckle down and made it. So now that I've actually mastered a hollandaise sauce, I feel that I'm well equipped to go and criticize restaurants that can't do it to my standards.
Well, the roux is basically, that's what it's all about. Well, I normally do it with equal quantities of butter and flour. And then gradually, is that how you do it, Gary? You can add in mustard sauce.
You're asking the man.
Not the chef.
I belong at the front. I'm there to welcome you and make space for you. If I cooked, I'd have the least popular restaurant in South Africa.
Well, at least you're honest. It sounds like me if I was cooking.
Gary, tell us, do you do muffins, crumpets, waffles?
Freshly baked muffins.
Freshly baked, lovely.
We bake our own biscuits that go out with the coffee.
Okay.
We're all about freshness quality.
Yes, I know.
Stunning. We've got 3 minutes left. So in one soundbite, why would you tell people that they should come to your restaurant? And you're not allowed to be biased.
Well, the simple reason for coming to my restaurant is that I built it for you. We built it with love.
Lovely.
We built it with 20 years worth of experience. Well, in fact, myself and my partner between us have over 50 years of experience. And that's all put to use to create something that you can enjoy, your family can enjoy, and that hopefully will blow you out the water and bring you back many, many
more
times.
Bring us back. That's exactly what we want to
do.
We want to go out with a wow experience, which you will get at Gary's place, the Oak Leaf.
Thanks. Speaking of wow, if I can just interject over here, we have got the most spectacular competition on at the moment. For an individual little restaurant like ourselves, I think it's quite a spectacular coup with Goose Wines, Retief Gleason's wine estate. If you drink a bit of Goose Wine at our restaurant, you go into a draw to win a round of golf with the Goose at Fancourt. Flights, accommodation, meals, and drinks. And all you have to do is drink wine. I mean, who needs a reason? But if ever there was one.
That's actually a wonderful, good enough one.
Wow.
Where is that going to be hosted, by the way, the golfing
tournament? The golfing is going to take place in Fancourt, so we have to fly you down there.
Where's Fancourt? Cape Town.
George-ish. And obviously, I will be there as the custodian of the Oak Leaf to look after.
I think you have to.
The lucky clients who win that particular prize. So if you're a golfer, your man's a golfer, I have ice-cold Goose Wine.
Stunning. I can't think of a better reason to go to the Oak Leaf restaurant. And honestly, if it gets two thumbs up from Barbara,
Three thumbs up.
Jeez, Barbara.
That's high praise indeed.
That is high praise indeed.
They're very fussy.
So if the oak leaf is good enough for the fussy Barbara Gilman, I think it's pretty much good enough for anybody else in Johannesburg. One last question. Are you on Facebook and Twitter, and what are your website details if our listeners want to get hold of you?
www.theoakleaf.co.za. That's theoakleaf.co.za. Telephone number is 884-5837. That's Johannesburg, 884-5837. And we're on Facebook and Twitter. My partner laments the fact that my Twittering skills are a little bit antiquated. But on Facebook, we're a lot more active and have quite a lot of people. So another way that you can get into the Goose competition is by liking us on Facebook. That's Oak Leaf Country Restaurants. We have winners that we post up there on a daily basis.
Nice one. And what I will do, I will share all of those details onto our Facebook page, Edward Chamberlain Bell, and also the Food Cops. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you'll get those details at the word of Ed. So according to Barbara Gilman, the Oak Leaf Restaurant is a sound bite. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back.
There are loads of ways to save this winter. Get 1 litre Basso Extra Virgin Olive Oil for only $69.99. You save R9. 1 litre assorted Clover Seal Milk is R10.49. 1.5 litres of assorted Take 5 Fruit Juice Blend is $16.99. You can buy any 2 Nestle 125ml King Cone or 90ml assorted Heaven Ice Cream for only R25. And a 500-gram brick of Rama Spread for Bread is $9.99. And you can save even more. Visit the kiosk and print your Smart Shopper vouchers. Only at Pick and Pay, always there for you. Prices valid 7th to the 11th of August and prices apply to Gauteng stores.
Hello, I'm Neil Starr. Please tune in to That Gramophone Show on Sundays at 7 p.m. for some real music nostalgia, when I'll be taking you on a trip down memory lane with music sourced exclusively of 78-speed shellac records. My music will cover anything from 1910 to the late 1950s. Remember, it's That Gramophone Show on Sundays at 7 p.m. with me, your host, Neil Starr.
Do you want to keep up to date with what's happening with Radio Today, Johannesburg? Have you always felt the urge to write on someone's wall but never quite dared? Now you can, and more, on Facebook. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/radiotodayjhb or on Twitter at Radio Today. That's the sign at Radio numeral 2 Day. Also follow our blog at radiotodayjohannesburg.blogspot.com. Radio Today, radio that delivers. Tell your friends about Radio Today, the station for great entertainment.
Welcome back to Soundbites with myself, Edward Chamberlain Bell, and Barbara Gilman.
Hi.
Barbara, do you know what's so special about the month of August?
It's Women's Day.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes, you remember. We still need to work out if you get presents on Women's Day or not. We're chatting now to Mariana van Niekerk, who has actually written a fantastic book, The Female Curve. And we just decided, considering that August is the month of Women's Day, we'll get Mariana onto the show to discuss The Female Curve and also what it's about. Mariana, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Hi, Mariana.
You're sounding a bit flat there. Can you speak a little bit closer into your phone, please?
Yes, I will absolutely do that.
Okay, that sounds much better.
Thank you.
Tell me, I found it very interesting reading your book, The Female Curve, because it's one of those contentious subjects that women never really like to talk about. It's like that women often feel that their body shape doesn't conform to a certain stereotypical ideal, but yet there are so many different kinds of bodies for women. I think men generally come in 3 shapes, whereas it women apparently coming a couple of shapes. So what was your inspiration? What was your thought process behind this book?
Well, mostly what we looked at as the femininity scale. And that is actually nothing to do with how the women look and their body shapes. It is more how much female hormones they have. So what we found is women that is very feminine right through to women that are least feminine, more masculine. So it's actually based on women's placement on a femininity scale and the corresponding reliance factors.
And just to clarify something there, it's not a question of their femininity in terms of their appearance, but more in their femininity and their demeanor.
Absolutely.
So one could, you could actually get, I hate to say it, but a very butch-looking woman with very feminine mannerisms, but you could also get, I suppose, a very glamorous, beautiful-looking woman with very unfeminine qualities.
Absolutely. It's a combination of reliance factors and placement on the femininity scale.
Okay.
And Marianne, what made you write this book? Did something inspire you? Or?
Yes, it's actually everything about gender fluidity. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to explain it in such a short time, but mm-hmm. what it is all about is that women are becoming more like men and men are becoming more like women, mm-hmm. and we're looking at a gender fluid society. So what we said is we start with looking at your more female feminine women right through to the least female mm-hmm. Feminine women with more masculine qualities. And that's where the book was actually born, and we're mm-hmm. busy with a men's book at the moment in time.
A good one.
Frame, which yes. is actually also based on the same concept, and then the third book will be the relationships between the five types of each of the groups.
Right.
The interesting thing that you mentioned there is that women are becoming a lot more masculine mm-hmm. or aggressive, and men are becoming a lot more feminine or, I can't think of the right word now. Why is that? Is that a part of the way society is just evolving and the way that our roles in society is changing? Or are there external influences? I'm thinking in terms of the food that we eat, the hormones that are in our products, things along those lines. Is this a natural progression for both sexes, or is this because of external influences?
I think it's both. It's definitely both. You know, we found that in the earlier times, say the 50s, the type 1 and type 2 women were very prominent. Later on in the 70s, you know, women became more assertive, and you find the Joan Baez, you know, coming out, and Janis Joplin, they were more your type 3 women. Then in the 80s, women just became more stronger. They built their own brands. And now women are, you know, the more corporate women, the strong women comes out, the type of 5 women, more frequently than previous. So there's a lot of factors. It's society, it's genetics, how open the society is for women to be unique in themselves. That also depends if they are prepared to show who they really are.
Sorry, Barbara.
Sorry. Marianne, what ages would this appeal to? Would it be sort of 20 pluses or?
Well, I would say all women.
Younger?
You know, yes, absolutely. My daughter is 15 years mm-hmm. old, and she already says, okay, my best friend is a type 4.
Okay.
Yeah, so no, they also read the books.
So it would be nice for a mother to give it to her daughter, say for Women's Day, as a gift.
Absolutely. What is fantastic, if you know which type your wife is, your mother-in-law, your boss, you would really help them to the relationship that you have, even your mother-in-law. I mm-hmm. think if a man buy this book, they will be able to understand their mother-in-law even better.
I can absolutely. See people buying the book, especially just for their mother-in-law. Tell me, I'm interested to know, what would a woman reader specifically get out of reading a book, and when she works out what her femininity scale is?
Yes, what we've got an online, as you've mentioned, we've got an online questionnaire just to give you a bit of a guidance where you lie. And then you can go and read more about the book, because more about the type. What we did in the book is we introduced 5 fictitious friends
yes.
who represent the typical characteristic values, appearances, lifestyles, and behavior of each type.
Tell us what those, I don't want to use the word stereotypes, but say role models. Role what are those 5 womanly role models that you've actually created?
Okay, our type 1s is more, they more have a social reliance. They're the most feminine of all the types. And they have the so-called X factor. They also thrive on social interaction, and they want to be the center of attention.
Can you give us a celebrity example?
Yes, absolutely. Marilyn Monroe was definitely mm-hmm. a top one.
Yes.
Okay.
A very feminine. She loved social interaction. If you look at type 2s, they lie medium high on the femininity scale, and they've got a mental reliance. So they think things through. They're traditional and conservative. They're more mothers, teachers, financial and administrative careers. And the example that we used in the book was somebody like Mary Poppins, mm-hmm. that type of more a motherly...
caring, nurturing.
And organized.
Yes,
very
absolutely.
Organized.
Our type threes are in the middle of the femininity scale. So they could be, they're very emotional. That is their emotional reliance. And they're very creative and true free spirits. And you'll find them in creative inspiration type of careers like writers and musicians and artists. So the Janis Joplins, the Oprah Winfrey.
I was going to ask you about Oprah. Yeah, she'd fall in this category.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And our type fours, they actually lie towards the lower end of the femininity scale. And they've got a self-reliance. They're down to earth. They're team players. They're close to nature. And they really thrive in the service type of industry, you know, where they can be of service to somebody, you know, to animals.
And excel at what they're doing.
At what they're doing. Mm. And then your type fours are very sporty, like your type of tomboy mm-hmm. type of woman.
Yes,
I was just thinking about her too.
Well, I would not
Martina.
Say I would not say that Martina is more our type five.
They
are the least feminine of all the types, and they have a physical reliance. Their physical body is very prominent.
And the Williams sisters?
Very much between four and five, I would say, yes. And these type five women are they've got traditionally male traits, and they're very forceful and assertive. And you'll find them having their own businesses, occupy influential positions in the politics, corporate and business world.
I did that online test on your website, and apparently I'm a type 4, so thank God that makes me not too feminine and probably more on the organized, service-orientated side. So I'm quite relieved that you've clarified that for me now. Tell me, as a matter of interest, where would Madonna fall on a scale of 1 to 5?
I don't know. You know, you actually need to know a person very in and out to really... but I would say she would be very much a type of 4. A full person, yes. Yeah.
And the late Diana, what do you think she would be?
Absolutely. I would find her between here. She was, I would say, between a 2 and a 3. You know, she really did a lot of things for other people, and she was, you know, really standing out in that way. I would say she's also had an emotional type of reliance. So I would put her on between a 2 and a 3.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Kate. Okay, seeing me talking of royalty.
yeah, that one is a difficult one. I think maybe a 2 or a 2. I don't know. I would say a 2.
I see a 2 or 3.
2, 3.
Yes, that is. And what we found with our research is my husband and myself, we wrote the book together, is that most when we send out the questionnaires to test our theory, most of the women nowadays is type 4s,
mm-hmm.
You know, followed by type 2s, then 1s, then 3s, and then 5s.
Ah.
So but you can also lie between the types, mm-hmm. you know. So it's not that you boxed, it's just to say that there's women definitely, if I can say to men, women are not the same.
I actually noticed when you're doing the questionnaire, it's like very often, I forget if you went on 1s, 2s, 3s, 4s, and 5s, if you went ABC, but you'll actually notice which one you are predominant. So you could be predominantly type 4. Maybe you'll have elements of type 5, and you might have like one or two little points. So it's not a question of like confining a woman to a particular stereotype.
Absolutely.
It's trying to identify her most dominant stereotype. The one thing that I got from this book, which I'd imagine, I didn't read it comprehensively, but the one thing that I imagine any woman who buys this book and reads it, it will help her to identify herself. And if, for example, you find that you are the nurturing type, but you're stuck in a corporate environment, you're going to feel frustrated, and vice versa. You might have had these great ambitions to be the perfect housewife and to have lots of children, but then you actually find you're more service orientated, and although that motherhood role is geared towards servicing your children, maybe you want to do a lot more. So it certainly opens the question. And I think maybe it opens the book for self-introspection, where women can actually decide for themselves, like, where do I fall on the scale? What direction should I actually be following in life to actually find a sense of fulfillment?
Yes, absolutely. I do workshop on finding your curve at work, mm-hmm. especially for working women. And the workshop focuses on discovering which type you are and how to use your uniqueness to excel in your career and also in your personal life. Because especially we found, you know, very arty type of top three women in the corporate world, it's very harsh for them to survive here because they are creative and, you know, it is very difficult. And then at the end of the day, they leave their job and they go and do something that for their purpose. And, you know, some women don't know that, and then they stay and they really suffer in the corporate world. So
Marianne, you could give them the tools to continue with what they want to do. You could guide them.
Absolutely. And also building healthy work relationship, yes, with your female colleagues, because that is a big issue at this moment in time. You know, why do certain women get the corner offices? Mm. What do they do differently? But if you use that specific strengths in your type, you can really excel in what you're doing. It doesn't matter where you are.
And Marianne, how if someone was really interested and they hadn't got your book yet, to access the questionnaire?
Also on the website, mm-hmm. it's thefemalecurve.com.
.com, okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
It's actually quite a fun website where you do the questionnaire.
Okay, I'm going to try it.
It's worthwhile doing. It's like if you've got nothing better to do with your time, is you go into the female curve and you try to work out what kind of woman you are. And I had to think, well, what kind of woman would I be if I had to do this, that,
yes,
or the other?
Yes.
So I look forward to seeing when you actually bring out, what would you call it, the male curve?
We're calling it the male frame.
Oh,
nice one.
Yes.
Does
yes.
the curve refer to the scale of 1 to 5? Does it refer specifically not to the feminine curve, but the mental curve?
The graph.
The emotional
absolutely
curve.
The graph.
Okay.
Yes.
Tell me, as we wrap up the show in 2-3 minutes, why do you think readers should actually buy your book? What will they get out of it? And you've got to be objective.
I'll try my best. you know, we've launched a book a few months ago. So the feedback that I got from people that actually read the book was that first of all they start to know who they are, and that is the most wonderful thing. And then they can embrace themselves and they can be able to live out their strengths. And if there's imperfections, all of us have that, but that's actually what makes you unique. Mm-hmm. And that's for me everything to do with Women's Month, so that women can just say, I am unique. You know, my husband always says, you know, why don't you do all these cooking? You know, you're not a good cook in the home. Other women are so much better than you are, but I am more a career woman. And so, you know, he now knows that, and he won't push me and compare me with somebody else.
Sure.
And what I also find is a lot of you know, mother and daughter relationships are being rebuilt.
Cemented.
They've actually read this book. And I think
the most
important thing is opportunities for personal growth and developing compassion, tolerance, and acceptance for the females in your life. And also the my top five women, they are less feminine, and they could be like a gay woman. They also came back and they were very, very happy about the way we wrote the book, mm-hmm. and the way we portrayed gay women, because that was also always something that is not talked about.
Taboo,
and they
yeah.
felt much more better
comfortable.
About
comfortable.
How we portrayed them.
Actually, I was just thinking now in the beginning of the show, I referred to certain like 1 to 5 women being aggressive. It's maybe not a question of them being aggressive, but being assertive, because I think
absolutely.
We sometimes have
yes.
to make that distinction. It's like we always say, like, a man is aggressive, but if a woman is aggressive, she becomes a bitch. She's not being a bitch. She's actually just asserting herself, and she's asserting
absolutely.
Herself in a healthy way. Just what Barbara asked now, where can people buy your book?
And how much is it?
Okay, the book is R149.
Okay.
And you can buy the book via the femalecurve.com on the website. And you can also contact me there. This month, especially for Women's Month, we will give the book on a discount price for bulk orders. If it's more than 10, we'll give the book R400 a book.
Nice.
Right,
one.
Thank you.
And one last personal question. When is the men's frame coming out?
The male frame, we're trying for next year. The research is much more intense, and the male book is definitely going much more deeper and on a more professional level, because we just started out to keep it light with the women, you know.
Okay.
That's why we've got little comics, and we're going much more into depth around these five types of men, and I think it's going to be very controversial.
Well, I'm surprised that you say it's going to take more research to research men, because, I mean, everybody knows that women are a lot more complicated than men are.
Absolutely.
Okay, I think we have to call it a break. Mariana, thank you so much for your time. That's Mariana van Niekerk, author of The Female Curve. If you want to buy the book, if you would like to preview the book, you go on to thefemalecurve.com. And what I will do, I will share all of those links onto our Facebook page, The Food Cups, and also Edward Chamberlain Bell. If you want to get a heads up from me on Twitter, I'll share those details on Twitter at The Word of Ed. Mariana, thank you so much for your time, and good luck with the sales of your book.
And all the best, Mariana.
Thanks, Edward. Thanks, Barbara.
Okay,
pleasure.
Have a great
quick
day.
Commercial break.
Bye.
And we'll be
Bye-bye.
Right back.
If you want choice, meaning you can find spectacles you really like at the right price, come to Spectacle Warehouse at Hilfox Centre, Atterbury Value Mart and Centurion Lifestyle Centre. Park at our doorstep and step into the biggest selection of optical product under one roof, priced to suit every pocket, and we can make your spectacles the same day. Spectacle Warehouse, unlimited choice.
There is a code of practice that governs advertising in South Africa. A code upheld by the Advertising Standards Authority. So if you see or hear an advertisement you consider misleading or dishonest, don't just cover your eyes or block your ears or keep quiet about it.
Write to the ASA at PO Box 41555, Craig Hall, 2024, or fax to 011-781-1616, or visit www.asasa.org.za.
From the Sydney Opera House to Monte Cassino, Cirque de la Symphonie. Breathtaking international circus acts are joined on stage by the Johannesburg Philharmonic Orchestra, performing famous classics conducted by Theodore Kuchar. Be transported to another world with Cirque de la Symphonie for two spectacular shows only at Monte Cassino on the 17th and 18th of August. Cirque de la Symphonie. Book now at CompuTicket.
Hello from Thubi Mboya. Stay with Radio Today, your station of choice. Radio Today, radio that delivers.
And we're back. And I'm losing my voice. Live. I've got some more here. I thought that it was quite an interesting chat with Marianne van Niekerk about her book, The Female Curve. It actually made me think about what you do in terms of your corporate training, the workshops that you do in communication skills.
And what you will do.
What I also do as well. Do you find there's a difference in communication styles between men and women?
It depends, I suppose. Not really. I think everybody's there to maximize what they can get out of the training. I don't really think there's a difference.
I found it interesting what Marianne mentioned is that men are becoming more feminine and women are becoming a lot more masculine. And I have actually sometimes found it's like you look at men often say directly, we need to get this done, and they'll instruct, whereas that women sometimes go,
They'll think about it.
It's like women don't want to offend.
Or commit on the spot.
Yeah. Yes. Would you mind? Can I? Is it okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And I satisfied what you've got to do, especially in business. Mm-hmm. And I know we always talk about business communication skills, but in life, communication skills are pretty generic. Instead of asking all the time, because I always say if you can ask a question, the person can say no. If you tell the person what you're going to do,
correct.
all they can prepared. Really do is like make a note of it.
Absolutely.
So instead of saying, would you mind if I took the day off, just say, I'm taking the day off on Wednesday, but I'm working overtime on Friday. You've offered the circumstances
option.
And the solution.
And the option. And I actually wonder sometimes if it's better to basically go in there full force, like I am going to take the day off, or may I take the day off? You're being assertive. And that's what we try to bring out in the workplace.
I think it also depends on the tone of your voice. To go and,
you're right.
and shout at your boss, I'm taking Wednesday off and I'm working overtime on Friday. Well, you're basically being aggressive.
Absolutely.
But if you walked up to and you catch him at the right time, timing is everything.
Timing is everything. Absolutely.
If you
caught him at the end of the day when he's rushing home and his wife's screaming at him, it's not a good time.
Not the best time. But if you say, just wanted to let you know I'm taking Wednesday off, but I'll work in the time on Friday.
What about if he emailed the person? Do you think that's too impersonal?
Do you know what is my pet hate in the modern world is people that email and SMS and there's this WhatsApp thing on things where they use technology to ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think if you expect a response from that person, phone them. Or if you're with your boss, with your partner, ask them. Would you mind? I'm going to let them know. Because it's very easy. And how many times has it happened where somebody sends you an SMS, are you available? What do you charge? Can you do?
Yeah, that's right.
And you just pretend either you haven't seen it or you don't want to answer the question. Or else very often I know, I've got emails and SMSs from last year that I haven't answered.
Right.
Here because I just never had the time. Whereas that if you, and this is my rule of thumb, if I want to know the answer, I want to know the answer now.
Phone.
Quick phone call.
I agree with you because In an email, you can't exactly elaborate, I charge so and so, such and such, my hours are such and such. Rather get them to phone you or you call them.
Exactly.
You know, I find so many people just give a missed call and they expect you to call back, which I think
is
very
rude.
That's very rude and very unprofessional. However, if they do take the time to say, may I call you, brilliant. You already know you're dealing with the right kind of person.
You just touched on something very important. Because I work with my phone in front of me on my desk. And I'm working a community office, so I don't want my phone to interrupt everybody, unless I'm working from home or if I'm freelancing. But I put my phone on silent and I keep it in front of me. So I will see my phone light up, and then the person hangs up. You have a missed call.
That is disgusting.
And I thought, but it didn't leave a message. It didn't go into voicemail. And I thought, and I always say this, if you can't afford to make the call to speak to me,
then
you can't afford to work with me.
I agree with you 100%. It is rude. Or else they'll ring once and say, I had to try and call you.
Does not work.
Doesn't work.
The only person I would phone back for a missed call would be my mother and my partner.
Okay.
End of story.
Right.
And maybe like a very urgent, a very close friend. But then I think sometimes people actually phone. They phone you by mistake, which is why they don't leave a message.
Right.
So I was thinking if it's important enough for you to call me, you'll call me back.
What about people who say, look, please talk quickly, and it has happened, I'm running out of airtime. That also is very, very rude.
I don't mind that
personally. Because it means they haven't really thought it through and they're hoping you'll call them back and chat.
Exactly.
It's not professional.
It depends on like how much, like depends I suppose on the circumstances. If they phoned you with 5 minutes airtime to discuss a half hour situation, they want you to phone them back.
That's right.
But if you've been chatting for 10, 20 minutes and they say I'm running out of airtime, I think, that's actually quite fine as well.
Yeah.
I just think modern technology has made it so much easier for us to communicate with people. And maybe what we should actually plan or discuss sometime at a future date is we call it netiquette, like etiquette on the internet.
Excellent.
In terms of how do you actually conduct yourself professionally and efficiently when you're engaging with people online? Because sometimes I find sending an SMS might be cheaper, but it also becomes time-consuming, cost-prohibitive. And the one thing I do not get involved in anymore are SMS conversations where, do you want to go to movies?
Yes. No.
Yes. What time? 1 o'clock. Let's make it 2 and we can go for lunch. What movie do you want to see? I think,
that's becoming so we want to hear the human voice now. We don't want to rely on SMSs. It's so rude, I think. I'd rather speak to the person. I'd rather have the contact. Obviously, for an emergency, I'm running late, blah, blah, blah. That's different.
Mm.
But
there, if you don't need a response, then I think sending an SMS is fine.
Fine.
Saying, cancel tomorrow, not available.
Finished. That's
the
right.
Check is in the mail. That's the kind of SMS I would send.
Right.
Check is in the mail.
Check is in the mail. The best.
I won't make a phone call. The other thing that I found with communication skills is so many times is, and just to get beyond the stereotype that women are, which is like what we sort of mentioned now, that women are passive and men are aggressive, I've actually found you can get very assertive and convincing women, and you can get very, I'm trying to think of the right word, weak-willed or complacent, apathetic men who don't communicate effectively. And the one thing that I'm mindful of is because I do so much online writing and I'm an online editor, I'm very used to chopping and changing words, cutting it down just to get the message across. So if a person waffles, even when I'm talking verbally, I'm editing, what am I saying, what am I going to do, what is the message I'm trying to get across. And there's some people who think, if I talk for half an hour, it's a great presentation. I say, no, it's a question of what is the value that you convey. Did you get your message across? And if you can get your message across in 10 minutes, then you really offered value and you'd probably seal the deal.
And it's the tone of the voice and the range of the voice and the way you're communicating with this person. You could be conveying a beautiful message with very aggressively and it means nothing. So the tone and the pitch is very, very important.
I also sometimes find that if you don't sound passionate or enthusiastic about what
you're talking,
you may as well, exactly.
Because it's the same thing if you get through to a company and the person's boring and disinterested, you don't want to communicate with that company. However, if the person, if you phone somebody and ask them what they're doing or what their course is and so on and so forth, and they really give you their all, you know you want to, you're tempted to go to that course.
Exactly.
It's all about passion.
There's nothing worse than dealing with an apathetic person.
Right.
And I look at salespeople. Oh, this is my one of my pet grubs. Not my pet hate at the moment because it's a long-running pet hate. You know, in certain supermarket or shopping centres, they've got these, I don't know what you'd call them, these like pop-up cosmetic counters selling things from the Dead Sea and things along
those. That's right.
I find it so intrusive.
It's very intrusive because sometimes you walk past them and they actually dab a little bit of the product onto your skin or whatever. That's wrong.
That's rude.
That's rude. And what about people who phone you at 7 o'clock at night when you're preparing dinner? I must just talk to you about your gutters. I mean, I know they're being paid for, but it's the wrong time. I think it's truly invasive.
I find it invasive, and I think for them it is probably the most cost-efficient time to contact people
because
you've got the excuse that you can't talk at work. But to me, my home time is precious.
It's precious.
I don't mind if, I just find sales pitches in general. Even worse, I find when it comes to communication, certain companies, they don't even call you. They put you onto an auto speed dial.
That is shocking.
You answer your phone and they say, if you're interested in life insurance, please
press
hold
one.
The line. And I'm thinking, you called me and I've got to be put on hold.
Correct.
Just
Correct.
Does not make
no,
sense.
No.
Coming back to these cosmetic salespeople, for want of a better word, because I really think they're terrible as salespeople. I hate the fact that they heckle at you. They shout
they
at
heckle.
You. Worse, they'll give you a sample, but literally they force you to sit down into a sales pitch.
And you feel guilty. You feel you've got to buy it for the sake of buying. That's the worst.
I don't, actually, because as far as I'm concerned, if they want my true opinion, I'll make up my opinion overnight. But their products as well. This doesn't make sense to me. Why would you sell a 6,000 rand moisturizer on a curb of a sidewalk in the middle of some scruffy, well, I wouldn't say Rosebank Mall is a scruffy mall, but they're busy undergoing a renovation. But I mean, these guys, you find them at Four Ways, you find them at Sandton. I've seen them in a couple of other very nice shopping centers. And then if you don't buy or you don't commit, they'll actually drop the price from 6,000 rand to 4,000 rand to 2,000 rand, which makes me wonder how credible are
how
they?
Credible.
How great are their products and what is it really worth?
I agree with you.
My favorite, I had a wonderful comeback line the other day. This guy, and also I've written for Men's Health and GQ, and I've done everything in terms of men's skincare and men's grooming. The one thing that I found interesting was this one guy was giving that classic sales pitch, you only get one skin in this lifetime, which is not true because it sheds itself every 27 days as it exfoliates. Your skin is an investment. You have to look after it. And 6,000 Rand divided by 30 days is not too much of an investment. And you just have to invest in your skin with these skincare products. So I asked him, why didn't he? And he looked at me and I thought, clearly, he is not using the skincare products
that he's promoting.
But if he can't use them, why should I use them? It's like end of story.
Absolutely.
And I'm very finicky when it comes to skincare. I think, you know what, I better deliver results, but I'm not prepared to spend an arm and a leg to actually get it. I'll save my money for Botox when I get older.
Botox, okay.
Anyhow, enough about that. What are you doing in terms of training? You've been a busy lady.
Very busy. I still do a lot of corporate work with regards to companies calling me and saying, please help my, let's say, tea lady to become a receptionist stroke switchboard lady.
That's upskilling.
Upskilling, which nice I one. Love. Because suddenly this lady or man is empowering themselves and they're excited about what they're doing. And I give my all. I help them. I'll go to the end of the earth to help the staff who are empowering themselves. I phone them after hours. I check on them. And I give my 150% to them. And I'm loving it.
Well, that's what I find I love the most. It's the empowerment. And
the sense of achievement at the end of the course when suddenly they are... Wow, they're there.
Exactly.
And they thank you, and I'm grateful, and I phone into the companies just to check on them, and I'm very gratified to hear the end results.
I find that, because I enjoy doing corporate training, especially soft skills, communication skills, mm-hmm. conflict resolution is also quite a nice one to do, especially in this mm-hmm. day and age. But I often find when it comes to communication skills, it's not about teaching people how to talk. It's about teaching people how to communicate more effectively in their own style. So right. if you're a naturally reticent person and not very aggressive and not very assertive, I can't train you to be that. Mm-hmm. But if you are a very aggressive person, I can't teach you to be a more softly spoken person. Mm-hmm. What I can teach a person is how to use their personal style, but to achieve the outcome that they want, align them. It's like, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to close a sale? You're trying to communicate something. Take your style and align it with the goal. And I found that's what gives me the most satisfaction.
Now,
and
how do you, with your conflict resolutions, how many people can you train simultaneously? Or does that depend on
You know what? If I was doing it for the money, I'd say as many as possible. Mm.
But ideally?
Ideally, I like a group of 10.
I agree with you. 10 is good.
Yeah, because then it's also a lot more intimate and there's a lot more interaction. Mm-hmm.
Pairing them off also is much easier.
Yeah, and also breaking them up into little groups is quite nice. But I found if I was lecturing to a hall of, say, 6,000 people, I might make a lot of money,
yes,
but nobody's going to learn anything because nobody applies and nobody understands. No. And I always like that word experiential learning. Mm-hmm. So if I do a communication or a conflict resolution workshop, we get everybody involved. Everybody gives feedback. And you often, because I always say there's no right and wrong way.
That's right.
I don't even know the right or the wrong way myself.
That's right.
But when you get different feedback from different people, I think that's a win-win situation.
Now, another thing, Edward, with regards to notes, PowerPoint, and all that kind of thing, is it still very topical?
I hate PowerPoint.
Exactly.
I call it death by PowerPoint.
I agree. It's the interaction which they remember.
There is place for PowerPoint, I think, in that the written word projected behind you reinforces what you're talking about. And people might not remember everything that you've said, but they'll remember that you mentioned something about something that they can refer back to. But if they're listening and they're reading, everything sort of meshes into each other.
Yes.
But then I like to do a handout.
Short bullet points.
Give them a summary. We're going to have to do one quick summary. Moving on from communication, have you seen this new show on the Food Network? It is the most amazing. If you enjoy Caribbean food, it is like really amazing. It's called Jonathan Fang's Caribbean Cookbook. It actually premiered last week on July the 22nd, and it's on DSTV. I think it's about 8 o'clock and 6 o'clock, and 8 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the evenings on DSTV channel 175. Have you seen it, by the way?
I've seen it, but I haven't watched it. I'm actually browsing through the various channels. I've seen it, but I will now.
Because you know what he does? He literally travels all around the Caribbean where he meets local food people. And this is what I love, is he's not taking dishes and reinventing them. He's basically taking you as a tourist, taking you on a guide through the Caribbean, showing you how they cook everything, and basically pulling his childhood memories of cooking for his family, discusses the Caribbean ancestry, blah, 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 blah. It is such a stunning show, Jonathan Fang's Caribbean Cookbook on DSTV channel. The other thing that I was looking at that I really enjoyed, but I seem to have lost track of, was America's Fast Food. What is it called? America's Bizarre Food.
Bizarre Foods, yes. I also started watching, but then it became a bit too sort of eating worms and that kind of thing, which...
Actually, I found the exact opposite. I found it wasn't that bizarre. It wasn't bizarre enough to live up to the title, but I thought it was very interesting. So I thought that was definitely worthwhile. I think what we should ask, our listeners, I always want to call our listeners our guests. What is your favorite television show? And you can tell us on the Food Cups. It doesn't even have to be the Food Network. It might even be something on the Travel Channel. I find there's a bit of cross-pollination happening over there.
And also, Edward, I wanted to ask the listeners what they think about Junior MasterChef. I think they are fantastic. Have you watched them?
The Australian one?
The Australian one.
Oh, you know.
Superb.
Those kids scare the living daylights out of me.
They are mini adults. Their food is superb.
I know. It's like when I look at what they do, a lot of adults couldn't cook like
Correct.
That. And when I look at, you're going to open up a can of worms here. When I look at that South African MasterChef, I'm so disgusted by the product placement that they insist on forcing on us. Even the Ultimate Braai Master, it is just filled with product placement, and it just leaves me nauseous. If you can't do a polished product, then rather don't do it at all. So, listeners, you tell us what you think on our page, The Food Cups. I'm Barbara Gilman. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. Once again, see you soon.
And if people want to get in touch with you, your website is voiceperfect.org. And if you want to get in touch with me, chamberlainbell.com. Hope you have a great weekend.
Bye.
Want to know what to eat, where to go, and who to know in Johannesburg and all around? Then join us on Soundbites every Saturday, brought to you by The Food Cups on Radio Today.